Okay, great. We may have some more people joining in, but we'll keep the conversation going. This week, we're going to be talking about engaging the community. We subtitle it Selling the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program to the Community and to Stakeholders. We've been focusing on the last several PLCs on between needs assessment, community assessment, and this is the final part of that whole bunch of activities engaging the community. And these things all have to be done very early in the process. But the whole rest of why we keep focusing on this is the whole rest of the grant and the success of your program really depends on this. So we're spending a lot of time on this. And then we're going to move on next week. And we'll be talking more about recruitment and we'll have some more guest speakers. So before we get started, though, we always get the news from Washington and from HMTRI. Glo?
Yeah, actually, I don't have any news from Washington, so I take that as a good sign. Nothing has changed. So I'm assuming that they're still planning on issuing the next RFP in the fall, just as we've been reporting in past PLCs. So that's about it from headquarters. From HMTRI, I did put an announcement out on our listserv that all of the resources and PowerPoints from the most recent All Grantee meeting are now up on the Brownfields Toolbox website. So if you go there, it's the website is brownfields-toolbox.org. And there's right on the home page, there's a link to this year's All Grantee meeting. If you click on Read More, you will go to the downloads page. I've got everything arranged into categories. Let me tell you what they are. EPA grantee PowerPoints and resources, HMTRI resources, NIEHS resources, and OSHA PowerPoints and resources. And I have retitled everything, so hopefully it makes sense to everyone, not just me. And so if you go there to look specifically for something, it should be easy to find. But if you can't find what you need, just give me a call or send me an email, and I will try to find it for you. I put out a couple of listserv posts of people looking for trained people to help with the cleanup from Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. I know that there have been some grantees that have responded to those requests. I haven't heard any more since the post that I've put out. So if you still have people and still want to respond to those requests, I would say go ahead and do it. Other than that, I have been working on our quarterly report because HMTRI, we have to report just like everybody else. So that's what I've been working on. That's it for me, Mike.
Okay. We don't have to use ACRES, but you all, those of you who are grantees do. So you have to file two reports every quarter and always remind you, file those quarterly reports on time because someday when it's time for you to re-up, they're going to look at whether you filed those on time and what those reports look like. So you really need to mark it on your calendars and make sure you do the quarterly reports. And every region has a different level of detail that they want. Some are very simple and some are much more complicated. It really is up to the regional coordinator. So if you have any questions about that, talk to the regional coordinator, but always make sure you do that. It's very important. To add on to what Glo said about the annual grantee meeting, and if you didn't get to go, that's fine. There are some really good presentations. And when you go in there, and she talked about the major categories, I found one thing that's very helpful. Sometimes it just talks about the grantee, but if you want to find out what the subject is that it's about, go into the HMTRI resources that's in there when you go to the Brownfields toolbox, and it's right there, and it's got the annual all-grantee meeting. Go to the HMTRI resources, and then download the agenda for the meeting. And on that agenda, you'll see all the presentations that were made. And for example, if you wanted to talk about using tablets, you could go to the agenda. It was on 2:15 p.m. It'll say Limitless Vistas, New Orleans. And you can then go to the slides, the presentations, and you can go to Limitless Vistas and see what they did. So, for example, so it's just a little extra step, but just find out which grantee did different presentations and then go there and then download it or read it or whatever you'd like to do. And it's a handy way of finding out. For example, there is Glenn Falls had a session on engaging the community and selling your program. So if you go to the agenda, look up engaging the community presences, this presentation that you may not have been able to go to or missed or didn't get to the meeting, and then you'll find Glenn Falls in there, and then you can go and download the Glenn Falls slides. It's not totally complete because these are talking points, but it'll give you some good ideas. And there's a lot of interesting things in there. For example, I didn't get to go to the Glenn Falls one, and when I went to the session they had all kinds of application forms and things like that that they had also presented and put on there. So that's just a little hint in terms of using the downloads from the All Grantee meeting. And again, even if you didn't get to go, I would check it out and download the agenda first. Check out some of the sessions that you might be interested in. You could attend your own meeting and just go to those grantees and see what they presented. And there's also some very good things from EPA in terms of talking points. And if you have any questions on those, just email us and we can elaborate on what those presentations were all about in future PLCs, and we'll talk about them. The interesting thing is we had suggested that in the last PLC was that there probably would be some openings for people with HazWhopper, and sure enough, there is a call out, or was a call out, for HazWhopper. We're not sure yet if that's over. There may be the private sector company is located in Texas, and I'm sure they may not even know what their needs are yet, but they do know that whoever goes on a hazardous material site has to have that certification, and it's just not something you can get overnight real quick. So it might be a great source of jobs for some of your grantees and could then lead on to future permanent employment. The other offer that was made was really interesting. It was one of our grantees from 2013. Ricardo was at the All Grantee meeting, and he got a great job and worked his way up, and he's looking for people who want to go to Oregon or Portland. Seattle has two offices there, and he would also be interested. If you have someone in the future, that's not something that's linked to the hurricanes, but if it's something in the future that you may want to keep in mind for future graduates, just put them on your Rolodex and see what he says. One other follow-up before we start talking about working with the community is the whole issue of titles. And we talked about this a little bit in the last PLC. When you do your needs assessment, and when you do your even your community assessment and your marketing, it's very hard to describe what our people do. They do a lot of things. And it's almost like it's a subcategory. It's almost like saying, well, you're a doctor. Well, what kind of doctor are you? You know, are you an anesthesiologist? Are you a surgeon? Are you skin? Whatever. Pretty much like many occupations, we've got this general category for environmentalist or environmental technician or sanitarian, or it could be whatever it is. But often it might be a plumber, and the plumber is working with asbestos. It might be a truck driver, but the truck driver is hauling hazardous materials. It could be a transportation road worker, but he's a flagger, and he has to have special certification. So it makes things very complicated. And if you do your needs assessment and you start using occupational titles, you can get bogged down and not get a very good response. Probably a better approach to it is, do you have positions that require environmental certifications or OSHA certifications? And they say, well, we do. It's not, he's not an environmentalist. He's not, we don't call him an environmental technician. He operates a certain piece of machinery, but he's operating on hazardous materials, or he's guiding traffic around a hazardous material site, but we don't we don't call him an environment. We don't consider him an environmental technician. Well, we do. So it's a subcategory. And again, if you do any kind of surveys or if you look at state, this is the problem with getting your needs assessment from the state. You won't find the data you need. You really have to drive down another level or two. And you're really more concerned with certification, skills, and knowledges that are required to do certain jobs. You could call it whatever you want. But that's what you're really looking for. And when you address the needs in your community, you also have to keep that in mind, that if you do a quickie analysis, you're going to come up short all the time. So this is why we recommend when you do your needs assessment that you really focus more on skills and certifications rather than on job titles. Well, having said that, I'm going to follow up today, and some of you may have some ideas on what works for you. I'd like to follow up on what Paul McFadden did in the last PLC from Rochester. It was a great presentation. And I also want to combine that with some of the things that Glenn Falls talked about at the All Grantee meeting. And this is really all about engaging the community. How do you engage the community? Now, this is a little different than we divide this into community assessment. You're assessing what kind of community you're going to be working in. This is one of the first things you do. And we've talked about this in previous PLCs. You also want to start doing this labor market assessment because you want to find out where the jobs are. So in the community assessment, you're scanning the state. And the way Paul did it was he was able to divide up Rochester into the quadrants, four quadrants, and he was able to find out, because he had an advantage, he was in the mayor's office, or is in the mayor's office, he could find out where most of the activity is in terms of cleanup. And he wants to overlay his community with where the jobs are so that people don't have to travel way across town or can't get there. So that's one criteria. He went into those communities and he started to find out and pinpoint where does he want to target primarily his program. Then he had to go into community and do a community assessment. Would you be welcome in that community? Are there things like competing gangs in that community? Are there other external factors that you may not know about? Are the churches and organizations willing to work with you? Are they interested in working with you? Do the residents of that community think favorably of environmental remediation? It wasn't that long ago when I spoke to some people at Morgan State, and they said, well, you know, in a lot of communities that environmental workers are right down there with law enforcement. And I said, what? They said, yes, because they look at it as invading our community, taking our jobs away, and then leaving the community and leaving us high and dry. So you really need to look carefully across your community in your community assessment. And this is where you start to get names and phone numbers and contacts of both employers and community organizations. Now we move to the step after we've done that, which takes a long time, which is why we're talking so much about that early in this whole idea of getting ready for the next RFP. The next step now is more of a PR or a winning that community, engaging the community, finding stakeholders. And this is a combination of what you did early in assessing the community, working with City Hall, and doing a lot of groundwork in terms of finding out or creating buzz in the particular community you're deciding to work in. For example, if we've got the people from Indianapolis, if you could do the whole area of Minneapolis, but there are certain parts of town you may want to work in. And then you want to find out what community groups are there. And then you want to get into those community groups and you want to win them over. And this is the phase where, again, if you work with City Hall, as Paul does, you've got a distinct advantage. You need to find out who the contacts are in that community. You've got to find out what organizations are in that community. You've got to find out what which type of faith organizations are there, what kind of Black organizations are there. So you're drilling down to actually the place that you're going to be working in. And so the best place to start there is in city council, within the mayor's office of planning. For example, of that would be what happened in Charlotte as they were developing their brownfields program. They had everything laid out by city planners of how they wanted to do things. They were going to have certain areas of commerce and industry and retail, and they had this beautiful plan all by all the city planners. Fortunately, the mayor was farsighted, said, well, we need to talk to community groups. And as they talked to community groups, they found their plan was totally wrong, that they did not want what they had planned, but the community wanted something different. They wanted to mix the retail with the community and have different parts of this community where they would not become a food desert, for example, or that there would be retail without going clear across town. So they were able to change their plans. And this is pretty much what you want to do. You want to find out if you're not welcome in a neighborhood to target that, don't go there. Then you have to go back and replan what you're thinking of doing. And the other thing that because he's in city government, Paul was able to go to the people who he knew, and that's basically Office of Planning, the mayor's office, and we'll talk about this later. He was also able to find out who the major contractors are in those communities, and he added that anyone could do that. It's not private information. So once you're in the mayor's office, you could go to planning, you could go to contracts. You've got to find your way around there. You could find out what community groups are active. And you want to start out with one or two. Faith base is a really good place to start in once you get into a community. Find out who the pastors are, but who the informal community leaders are. And you want to talk to them about what you're planning on doing. Now, everything I'm talking about is done way before you even begin to write your grant, which is something that nobody wants to do. There's this tendency of, I don't want to make all these promises, and I don't want to make commitments. I don't want to go through this effort of writing this grant and not getting the grant, and then having to go back and tell all these people that we didn't get the grant. But there's nothing wrong with that. They will respect you for this, and you have to do it in order to get the grant. You have to make the attitude, if you're going to do it, you go for the win. You don't mess around and do it half-assed, so to speak. You really go assuming you're going to get the grant, because when you write your grant, it's going to be based on these things you're doing now. What community leaders did you talk to? What non-religious organizations did you work with? Is there a organized labor group that has a presence in that community? Did you talk to them? Did you talk to city council? Did you tell them your plans? And the way you want to phrase this and everything you do is you want to say, we are planning that EPA has a $200,000 grant. We are going to apply for that. And the time frame is November. We're getting our groups together. We're going to be forming our advisory boards. We're going to be choosing the communities we're going to work in. And we need to do that now. We may or may not get it. The competition is steep, but this is our plan. Will you help us? And that's the key, because you'll find out, one, if you go to city council or the mayor's office or planning, says, we will not only help you, we'll endorse the plan, we'll give you some support in terms of marketing. We also will introduce you to some people we know that we think you should know. So what we're doing here is we're starting to gather steam in the community. Now, this is different than the assessment, which we did earlier. This is now more of a, I don't want to say public relations, but it's more of, we are doing this. We're laying the groundwork now. We're seriously considering this part of town. And the interesting part of that is, if you're talking in city planning, they might say, you've got a great idea and we want to do it, but I think there might be a better place we can do this because we have a better relationship with the community in this part of town. And they need more help, and we've had big success. And we have other federal programs in this part of town. Maybe it's an enterprise zone of some sort or a rebuild whatever type program, or there might be some local subsidies that are there. There might be a community development corporation. These are corporations that hire our people, our graduates. You might even submit your grant as part of a community development corporation. These are entities that are formed by the community. And you may be enlightened that once you get into this relationship building, that your original thoughts have to be tweaked a little bit. So what we're doing, again, we're building up momentum. Whatever you do, you want to document it, because that's going to come in later. You're doing it now, but when you write your grant, you're going to find out, we haven't talked about the RFP yet, but it wants those kind of things. It's looking for that. And the whole idea of community assessment, community relationships, are 10 to 20% of the grant. And those of you who have submitted grants find out that the spread between those get funded and not is so small, it'll either get you in or knock you out. So if you could name names and organizations and all the groundwork you did in this developing this community relationship, you're going to be way, way ahead. So, again, document, start at City Hall, go down to local community organizations, religious organizations, which become incredibly effective when it's time to start recruiting. Many of our programs, their supply lines come from the community. They come from the faith-based organizations. The announcements are made in church. The recruitment happens in the church. Often, as Paul mentioned in Rochester, they will have town hall or community meetings in the church. They're tremendous support, and they have contact to the people in the community. And we find in many of these programs, once you get, the hardest class is your first class, and the hardest thing is that recruitment and screening. So once you get that rolling, the word of mouth spreads, particularly if you're working in the same target groups. It spreads, and the first year it's tough recruiting, and when we talk about that, that'll make or break your program. Good recruiting will make it a breeze through the whole program, and it'll help in terms of retention and everything else. Bad recruiting or desperate recruiting will result in dropouts and hard-to-place people. So the faith-based organizations and the families are all there, and it makes your whole job simpler because you're a little more focused on a particular part of town. So as we do that, the next thing we want to do, we have government on our side, and I expect as you talk to the mayor or his surrogates in City Hall, they're going to refer you. You're always going to ask, who else can I contact regarding what we're doing, regarding this program? And he's going to say, well, I think you need to touch base with Diener. We definitely want you to touch base with HHS, the health and safety, HHS. We want you to talk to the WIB to see what kind of benefits we can get to your enrollees. They are going to know around City Hall all the money that's available that will allow you to leverage, which we'll talk about at a separate PLC. So that is just such an important thing to do. Those of you who are familiar with working with government or are in City Hall or have your city of, your grantee, your fiscal agent, have really a distinct advantage. Those people who are not familiar with government might tend to be a little hesitant about walking in and talking to people, because they don't know the system. It's one of those things, if you're familiar with government, it's much easier to walk in and start collecting names and contacts and who should I see? And that's the last question you always want to ask. One, can you help us? Two, can you give me some other people I could talk to and start going to these people? And as the more people you talk to, the more references you're going to get. And in fact, if you can even have them call ahead for you and say, I'd like to set up an appointment with them, could you give them a call and tell them what we're planning on doing? Again, the word is always what we're planning on doing. We're going after this grant with a vengeance, and we need to establish an advisory committee, and we need to establish stakeholders, and we need to get our employers together. And again, the advantage Paul had is he was able to make a contact in City Hall on who the contractors were, which made his placement a slam dunk because he knew who all the contractors were, and he was able to get them on his advisory committee. That's part of what you'll be doing as you go through this phase. Once you get into these and have these meetings, the other thing you want to do is always ask the question, would you be willing to work on our advisory committee? And we're talking about not just employers or potential employers. We're talking about people in government. We're talking about certainly employers, but we're talking about pastors. We're talking about a community leader. There might be a block, a particular block group, block party group that works in the neighborhood with many community groups that you may want to have someone there that can work with the other people and give you a better appreciation on where you may look for recruits. So, again, as you go along, we're building steam. As you get closer, and again, part of this is also making an announcement in city council, and that's not hard to do. You just have to, when you get into the mayor's office, you ask, I really would like to make an announcement in city council that we're planning on doing this. And you get them to make an announcement for you or introduce you to city council that, you're just in the planning stages. You're not sure if you're going to get this grant, but you're working on it. And it brings all kinds of publicity. Some of our grantees have put this out in news releases and gotten on the radio of what they're planning on doing. And as I said, you go full steam for it. And the more people hear about it, if they hear what you're doing, that's makes the rest of it easier. It's like a snowball gathering steam, and then you'll find people want to join your group. So this is what we're talking about when we start talking about energizing the community, finding the stakeholders. They will be fairly easy to find also, because in every point of the way, you're going to always be asking these questions of who do I contact next, and how do I get their support? How do I get them on the advisory committee? And by the time it's time to meet Grant, ideally, if you could set up a group email with all the people you've talked to and tell them what you're doing. It may be too early, unless you're with a large organization that's set up a Facebook page and some of the digital media. Maybe not. But you will want to keep them all in contact through the whole process that says this is what we're doing. When the Grant RFP comes out, the RFP is coming out. This is what we're planning on doing. We're going to have a meeting. If you feel confident, you might go on and have a physical meeting of all your stakeholders and advisors and find out who's going to be working on the advisory committee. So does anyone out there, have they had successes or failures in working with City Hall or establishing community relationships? I know that, Jerry, you've done a lot of good work in terms of coordinating your stakeholders. Go ahead.
You know, we have a very, very close relationship with City Hall. We always have. They were the ones that initially suggested to us that we investigate this whole EPA program and see if it was appropriate for our community. So it started with City Hall, and of course you're familiar with the Pittsburgh Power Company, which is also it's a city-owned municipality. So they are the I like to call them the backstop funder of the program. Anything we're short on, they make up. So it's a pretty darn close relationship. And in fact, you know, right after this telephone call, the city manager is going to come up and have lunch with the trainees. So it's ongoing and very constructive.
You know, in your case, go ahead. Someone made a comment.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No, you can go ahead and I'll go after. This is Nancy from Cypress Mandela.
Yes, Nancy. Go ahead. You first.
Hi. Oh, no. I just also wanted to share our situation, too, with our city in which we're located in. Even though, of course, we serve nationally, we went to the city of Oakland recently, and they were originally going to write us in to an annual kind of an agreement that they were going to support us with whatever developer fees coming in, and that actually did not go through. But what ended up happening was with the help of the CBOs, kind of how you were talking about earlier, the CBOs stepped up, and we had an enormous amount of CBO support push back on the local government. And what that ended up doing was the funding that the city did end up funding, which was transportation. They funded a lot of the transportation but didn't fund the training, our training program for it. The CBOs pushed back, and basically what ended up happening was the transportation organizations are now partnering with us more this year. So now we have more support from our BART, our Rapid Bay Area Rapid Transit System, AC Transit, which is our bus system, and a lot of other transportation organizations stepped up and were like, we're going to definitely partner with you on all of our projects that the city is now funding. So that was really cool.
It's amazing how much of this is informal networking. And right. What you get, in your case, came from a totally different direction. That
totally.
You went for one thing, and then all of a sudden, boom. When Detroit first came online, her name slips me, McGlow, you might remember. She worked in City Hall, and she kind of hung around City Hall and ended up in a meeting. It was an open meeting, as I understood it. It just happened to be all the remediation contractors. These were all the contractors who were deconstructing Detroit at the time. And she sat in on it. And one of the complaints or problems they were having with the mayor's office was, we can't find enough qualified people. Bingo. Well, we do have them. You know, we have them. Well, then they said, well, we'll take as many as you can make. And I believe that first year, they ended up having three cohorts to try to deliver. Do you recall that conversation back? This was several years ago when you first started in Detroit.
I do, and I'm looking for that name, and I'm not seeing it either.
But anyway, it was a great, great thing. Totally serendipitously, it was just basically hanging out in City Hall. It gets harder to do that with security these days, but if the fact that you could troll and find out people and find the key word is, do you know anyone else I could talk to about this? That's what you really want to find out. And again, people who have worked in government or are in government have a lot easier time because they're not intimidated by this stuff, but people in government love to talk to people, and they are welcome to help you. They're really on your side. So you could end up getting someone who's just, you know, spending time till they retire. But for the most part, they will help you and they'll recommend, well, if I were you, I'd contact this person or I would contact so-and-so.
I think you're talking about Lorena Wheeler.
That's right, Lorena.
Mm-hmm. But Anita's on the phone. Anita's on, I think, on the call. From there.
Yeah, I am. You didn't hear me. I said Lorena, but I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
How are things in Detroit? You're pretty much working pretty close with City Hall even now.
Yeah, they've been on board for a long time, and also with the local land bank, that's been a big asset too.
Mhm. And you had that ability to get in there and work with them, and then you worked your way around the city, which is great.
There's been a lot of different departments, actually, that have been very helpful.
Well, this is the problem. Government is spread out, and particularly the block grants. There might be little pockets of money here and there that you could have your program running, and you don't even know about it. Now, I'd like to speak to private sector companies that, or more private sector or community development corporations who may not be as familiar. And there you've got to overcome that resistance to go into government and get involved, because there's just so many benefits between the WIB, between pots of money that are there that nobody knows about, between just getting support from the city, locating the right place. They may know the active unions in the community that can help you. So, and it makes a big difference when they're behind you rather than if they may not be as familiar with what you're doing. Well, we're a little over what the time we wanted to spend on this, but we'll be talking about it some more, and we're going to be talking to more grantees, and we'll be talking about recruitment, and then starting to move now away from the community assessment, the labor market assessment, and moving more towards and getting your program marketing. And now we'll start talking about some of the recruitment and other parts of the program. Yes. Question? Oh, okay. Did anyone have a question? Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, great. Well, we're going to have another session,
okay.
And that'll be on the 27th. And,
27th, okay.
Of September. Wednesday, same time, same place, same call-in. And between now and then, if you have any questions or anything, just email myself or GLOW. GLOW, anything?
Sure to okay. check out, no, just be sure to check out the meeting resources on the website.
Great.
Oh, actually, that was my question. What's the website?
It's
you might have given it up.
Yeah, but that's okay. Brownfields-toolbox.org.
Oh, right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
And there's a link right on the front, right on the homepage to the grantee meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whether or not you went there, I would just go there and just hang out and click through some of the things on there. And particularly, as I said, go into the all grantee meeting. It's a box. It's right in front of you. When you go in there, go to the agenda and kind of peruse through the agenda. And if there's some topics you are interested in or want to hear about, then
yeah.
click on that, find out what that was assigned to, which grantee, and then see what their PowerPoint slides are. Well, thanks, everybody. And,
thank you.
Talk to you.
Okay,
talk
thank
to
you.
You.
Very
thank
informative.
You.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.